This is Lynn Curry reading the News Gazette for Thursday, October 8th, 2020. Thursday's coronavirus updates. Man in 30s, woman in 90s, both with underlying conditions, become 26th, 27th Champaign County residents to lose lives to COVID-19 by Jeff D'Alessio. Champaign County has lost two more residents to COVID-19. Its sixth and seventh coronavirus-related deaths in the past 9 days. A man in his 30s and a woman in her 90s, both with underlying health conditions, became the 26th and 27th county residents to die of COVID-19, CU Public Health Administrator Julie Pride told the News Gazette on Thursday. All seven deaths the past 2 weeks involved residents with underlying health conditions, Pride said. Six involved people in their 80s or 90s. Other Champaign County coronavirus numbers of note from Thursday are the county's 7-day positivity rate dropped from 0.6% to 0.5 after 5,506 new tests produced 32 new cases. The number of county residents with hospitalized with COVID-19 remained 2. Recovered cases now outnumber active ones, 4,744 to 332. New metrics on CUPHD's coronavirus dashboard show that there have been 7,511 close contacts who've quarantined throughout the pandemic. Of those, 1,047 are currently in quarantine. Another new metric, close contacts that became positive, 798. Vermilion County. Westville High, Bismarck Henning Schools to go remote for 2 weeks. Two Vermilion County high schools, Westville and Bismarck Henning, are shifting to all remote learning for 2 weeks, district officials said. Both the Bismarck Henning District and Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Cooperative High School will reopen for in-person learning on October 26th, Superintendent Scott Watson announced in a letter to parents Thursday. Quote, unfortunately, we have had a few more positive COVID-19 test results in the district. We also have a large number of students in quarantine for close contact. I conferred with the Vermilion County Health Department this morning, and the consensus is that we needed to shut down both districts, Bismarck Henning CUSD number 1 and Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvin Cooperative High School for 14 days and go remote learning during the closure, end quote, Watson wrote. Quote, the full disclosure will begin tomorrow and we will reopen for in-person instruction on Monday, October 26th. This will hopefully give things a chance to settle down before the students return. This definitely is not the news I was wanting to share. I do believe the district has done everything it can do in order to offer in-person learning, but we cannot control what happens once students leave. Please continue to work hard to keep your children safe and healthy, as we will certainly get through this. As we have done since day one, we will continue to work with the Vermilion County Health Department and the Illinois Department of Public Health to strictly follow their guidelines pertaining to public schools, end quote. Update, man killed early Thursday in Champaign identified, by Mary Shank. Champaign. Champaign police are investigating the sixth homicide of 2020 in the city. Just after 2 a.m. today, police found an unresponsive man in the 3000 block of West William Street. Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup identified the victim as Martin Morrow, 29, of Urbana. He was found in the middle of the street near Duncan Road, shot multiple times. He was taken to Carl Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 2:53 a.m. Northrup scheduled an autopsy for Friday. Police said their preliminary investigation suggests Mr. Morrow was on foot when the shooter approached and fired several times, hitting him in the upper torso before running off. They ask that anyone nearby who might have video surveillance contact the department at 217-351-4545. Tips can also be made to Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8466. There have been no arrests. Champaign Man Charged for Sunday Shooting by Mary Shank. Urbana. A Champaign man has been charged with attempted murder and other felonies in connection with a shooting that happened Sunday. Demario Hilson, 34, who listed an address in the 1300 block of Garden Hills Drive, was also charged Thursday with aggravated battery with a firearm and being an armed habitual criminal. About 2:35 a.m. October 4th, Champaign police were sent to Hickory and Bellefontaine Streets for a shooting and found a 31-year-old man who had been shot in the leg. He was taken to a local hospital for treatment. Police found Hilson about 11:45 p.m. Wednesday on Paula Drive and arrested him. All three charges are Class X felonies, carrying a mandatory prison sentence of at least 6 to 30 years if convicted. Champaign County court records show Hilson has convictions dating to 2005 for resisting arrest, possession with intent to deliver cocaine, aggravated driving under the influence, and possession of a controlled substance. UI's new $20 million feed mill almost ready to open by Ben Zichterman, Urbana. The University of Illinois' new feed mill is almost ready to open. The $20 million Feed Technology Center on Race Street will replace the 93-year-old feed mill just south of the State Farm Center. Quote, "It's a bit of a scramble here at the end for a project of this scale, but all the major equipment is installed," end quote, said Rod Johnson, head of the Department of Animal Sciences. Quote, "We're in the midst of completing some safety checks," end quote. A load of corn was delivered, quote, "so they can start running that through the various aspects of the feed mill to remove construction debris," end quote, he said. The new feed mill should be able to prepare complete diets, quote, "in the next 2 weeks," end quote, Johnson said. The new facility will deliver 8,000 tons of specialized research diets each year, which animal nutrition scientists will use in their research on livestock and companion animals. Once the new feed mill opens and is fully running, the old one will eventually be shut down, and research park officials have expressed interest in using that land to expand. Quote, "The current feed mill sits at a location of 4th and St. Mary's that campus would like to repurpose," end quote, Johnson said. Johnson said the old feed mill was not in good shape with outdated technology and was not a great learning environment for students. And he said the new one will allow researchers to make real-time nutritional assessments of various ingredients. The College of ACES announced Wednesday that it had received a $50,000 donation from Compeer Financial, one of several ag industry donations for the project. Quote, "They recognize the value of having a new state-of-the-art feed mill and what it can do for agriculture," end quote, Johnson said. Sneak peek, New Look, Champaign High Schools by Anthony Zillis. Champaign. Much of the tan brick wall that led into Champaign Central's Seeley Hall remains unchanged after years of planning and work on a new addition. The major difference now is that the wall is inside the school rather than on the outside. A brand new entrance leads into the school perpendicular to the old one. To the left is the old building, much of it unchanged, save for new light fixtures and much needed air conditioning. On the right, one of the crown jewels of Unit 4's $264.7 million six-school, two-field overhaul is almost complete. The three-court gymnasium, complete with around 1,700 seats, an archery net spanning an entire wall up to the ceiling, and a flood of natural light. Quote, the renovations don't have much of a wow factor. So when you open up a brand new gym like this, and they've never had at Central, it really catches your eye, end quote, said Mark Ressler, capital projects manager for the renovations at Central and Centennial. Quote, it sounds like they're going to use it plenty, end quote. When students eventually return to school, they'll find themselves in buildings that, in some portions, look completely different, and some that are completely new. One nearly finished new addition at Central includes the brand new gym, locker rooms, weight rooms, and multipurpose rooms. The library has been redone, and so have many classrooms. Parallel to the new addition, the old auditorium, the band room, a small gym, the industrial tech shop, and the kitchen were torn down. Piles of debris and construction vehicles now sit where a new academic addition will rise up, including a new auditorium where music rooms, classrooms, and a cafeteria will sit, ready to be used for the 2022-23 school year. The challenge with wiping out an entire section of the school is that now there's an exposed interior wall, which has been temporarily insulated. In both buildings, having students gone for the semester has given the construction crews a little bit of room to work, but not as much as outsiders might think. Quote, it gives us a little bit more leeway, end quote, Ressler said, quote, but not a lot, because we have several dozen teachers at each school trying to do the remote learning. We're trying to not get in their way, so we're trying to not keep them from doing their job. We're going to work with building principals and some of the staff to see if there are parts of the building we can still work in, but we're trying not to disturb any of the remote learning, end quote. At Centennial, a brand new two-court gymnasium is up and ready on the north side of the building. The Chargers' new gym is smaller because the school still plans on using its existing gym for competition. A new addition on the south is flooded with natural light, with large windows looking out onto the athletic fields to the west of the school. A large industrial tech shop has been built, complete with welding stations, so that Centennial students will no longer have to travel to Central for class. The cafeteria now has floor-to-ceiling windows, and some of the dingy yellow tiles and walls have been replaced with more modern gray tiles and paint, giving the building a different feel. The completed additions now sit mostly empty, ready to be filled when in-person learning resumes. Quote, it's pretty exciting, end quote, Ressler said. Quote, the summers were so busy, so it's nice to get near the end of that. We're still finishing up some stuff, but we're hopefully getting ready for students to come back before too long, end quote. As cases spike in Vermilion County, quote, we're definitely concerned, by Ben Zichterman, Danville. After starting the month with 123 active COVID-19 cases, Vermilion County was already up to 242 a week later, and the county's seven-day positivity rate has reached 10.6%, above the state's warning level. We are definitely concerned, County Health Department Administrator Doug Toole said. Quote, we've got one of the higher positivity rates in our 20-county region, end quote. A day after reporting 79 cases, breaking the single-day record it had set only 3 days earlier, Vermilion County reported 34 new cases Wednesday. Its seven-day rate rose slightly from 10.5% to 10.6%. If the overall positivity rate of Region 6, of which Vermilion County is a part, rises above 8% for three consecutive days, the region could face additional mitigations, such as closing bars and restaurants at 11 p.m., no indoor dining, and limiting gatherings to 25 people. Quote, this is a situation we're taking very seriously, end quote, Toole said, adding there's no sign that the spread is slowing down in his county, and there isn't a single clear source either. Quote, we have not been able to tie it to a particular activity or event or workplace, end quote, Toole said. It seems to be coming from all sides, end quote. The state's mobile labs were sent to Vermilion County for 3 days last week, testing more than 200 people. But Toole said, quote, I could certainly use more testing, end quote. As the county's total of confirmed cases crept closer to 1,000, it was 948 heading into today, Toole encouraged residents to avoid gatherings. Quote, "I'm just hoping that it's a wake-up call for people as they're making decisions about gatherings to attend, whether they're family functions or a small group of friends or a large activity," end quote, he said. While some people might not be worried about themselves, Toole encouraged them to think about family members. Quote, "If it's going to move throughout family members, it may hit some of them hard," end quote, he said. So far, 5 people in Vermilion County with COVID-19 have died. 9 are currently hospitalized. Toole said, quote, "We're certainly concerned about hospitalizations," adding, "Their condition could take a turn for the worse quickly," end quote. Toole said the county doesn't have any specific plans at the moment to bring the caseload down. Quote, "We're continuing our efforts to wear masks, stay at home if you're sick, wash hands," end quote, he said. Quote, "But really, reconsider some of these gatherings," end quote. Louisiana told to brace for sad reality of Hurricane Delta by Stacy Plaisance and Rebecca Santana, Associated Press, Morgan City, Louisiana. Louisiana braced for a new hurricane less than 2 months after one devastated a southern swath of the state, with the governor warning residents that Hurricane Delta could turn debris from the earlier storm into missiles, and said Thursday was their last chance to prepare for the next potential hit. Forecasters warned that Hurricane Delta could blow ashore Friday with winds up to 105 miles per hour, 169 kilometers per hour, and a storm surge of up to 11 feet, 3.4 meters. They placed most of Louisiana within Delta's path, including the southwest area of the state around Lake Charles, where Category 4 Hurricane Laura ripped houses from their foundations, peeled off roofs, and tore trailers in half. Lake Charles has been under a mandatory evacuation order since Wednesday night, and city officials work to get people without transportation out of harm's way. Mayor Nick Hunter warily watched Delta's projected path as it moved steadily nearer to the spot where Hurricane Laura made landfall. Quote, "When it first developed in my mind, I said, no way, no way, there's no way that this is going to hit us," end quote, Hunter said in an interview Thursday. Quote, "And then as it got closer, it just became a sad reality that this was going to happen," end quote. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards reached out to residents ahead of Delta's expected arrival, saying in text messages and a 30-second robocall, they should, quote, "prepare now and have your emergency plans in place," end quote. Edwards said President Donald Trump approved his request to declare a federal emergency, which frees up federal resources. This is the 6th time in the Atlantic hurricane season that people in Louisiana have been forced to get ready for an approaching hurricane. Nearly 6 weeks after Hurricane Laura, an estimated 6,100 people remain in New Orleans hotels because their homes are too damaged to occupy. Trees, roofs, and other debris left in Laura's wake still sit by roadsides waiting for pickup. Quote, "All that debris could become missiles in really strong wind," end quote, Edwards said Wednesday. Edwards also worried about the, quote, "sheer anxiety," end quote, the latest storm could cause already traumatized residents. Weary residents lamented another round of evacuations and hurricane preparations amid the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Quote, "People of Lake Charles and in Cameron Parish have already suffered enough, and then here comes this one," end quote, Desi Milligan, who owns an RV park in Cameron, Louisiana, that was heavily damaged during Hurricane Laura. Quote, "Especially the elderly in their homes with no electricity. I'm just praying for them. If it were to hit them again, I can't even imagine, end quote. The National Hurricane Center said Thursday that Hurricane Delta continued to churn toward the Louisiana coast, whereas it expected to make landfall Friday evening. The Category 2 storm was moving northwest at 14 miles per hour, 22 kilometers per hour. A hurricane warning was in effect from High Island, Texas, to Morgan City, Louisiana. In Mississippi, Governor Tate Reeves also declared a state of emergency. The southern part of Mississippi could see heavy rain and flash flooding. Hurricane Delta is the 25th named storm of the Atlantic's unprecedented hurricane season. Delta hit Mexico as a Category 2 hurricane just south of the resort city of Cancun early Wednesday with high winds and heavy rains, cutting power to more than 260,000 customers and forcing tourists into storm shelters. No deaths or injuries were reported. Quote, "This has been the worst year that I have experienced," end quote, said Andreas Vito, 42, a food truck driver from Gramercy, Louisiana, who helped feed hungry evacuees after Laura. After learning this week that his native New Iberia, just to the east of Laura's worst devastation, was in Hurricane Delta sites, quote, "The hair rolled up on my arms," he said, "to see all this happening in one year. You know, with the wildfires, with the hurricanes, the rain, all the other stuff in the news, COVID, it's mind-boggling," end quote. Along with getting hit by Hurricane Laura and escaping Hurricane Sally, Louisiana saw heavy flooding June 7th from Tropical Storm Cristobal. Tropical Storm Beta prompted tropical storm warnings in mid-September as it slowly crawled up the northeast Texas coast. Tropical Storm Marco looked like it might deliver the first half of a hurricane double blow with Laura, but nearly dissipated before hitting the state near the mouth of the Mississippi River on August 24th. Court blocks extension of Wisconsin absentee ballot deadline. Madison, Wisconsin. A federal appeals court on Thursday blocked a decision to extend the deadline for counting absentee ballots in battleground Wisconsin in a win for Republicans who have fought attempts to expand voting across the country. If the ruling stands, absentee ballots will have to be delivered to Wisconsin election clerks by 8 p.m. on Election Day if they are to be counted. Results of the presidential race in the pivotal swing state would be known within hours of polls closing. Democrats almost certainly will appeal the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. Under state law, absentee ballots are due in local clerks' offices by 8 p.m. on election night. But Democrats and allied groups sued to extend the deadline after the April presidential primary saw long lines, fewer polling places, a shortage of poll workers, and thousands of ballots mailed days after the election. U.S. District Judge William Conley ruled last month that any ballots that arrive in clerks' offices by November 9th will be counted as long as they are postmarked by Election Day on November 3rd. State election officials anticipate as many as 2 million people will cast absentee ballots in November to avoid exposing themselves to coronavirus at the polls. That would be three times more than in any previous election and could overwhelm election officials and the Postal Service, Conley wrote. Republicans appealed to a three-judge panel at the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The panel upheld Conley's ruling on September 29th. Republicans then asked all 11 members of the court to review the case. The court stayed Conley's decision on Thursday. Any development in the case could have ramifications in the presidential race. President Donald Trump won Wisconsin by less than 1 percentage point, fewer than 23,000 votes, in 2016. Polls show Democratic challenger Joe Biden with a slight lead in the state, but both sides expect a tight race. Trump-Biden teams debate next week. Next week? Never. By Zeke Miller and Will Weissert, Associated Press. Washington. The fate of the final debates between President Donald Trump and Democrat Joe Biden was thrown into uncertainty Thursday as the campaigns offered dueling proposals for moving forward with the process that has been upended by the president's coronavirus infection. By Thursday afternoon, it was unclear when or how the next debates would proceed, or whether voters would even get to see the two men running for the White House on the same stage again before Election Day. The whipsaw day began with an announcement from the Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates, which said the next debate on October 15th would be held virtually. The commission cited health concerns following Trump's infection as the reason for changing the structure of the town hall-style debate. Trump, who is eager to return to the campaign trail despite uncertainty about his health, said he wouldn't participate if the debate wasn't in person. Biden suggested the event be delayed a week until October 22nd, which is when the third and final debate is already scheduled. Trump then countered again, agreeing to do a debate on October 22nd, but only if face-to-face, and asking that a third contest be added on October 29th, just before the election. But Biden rejected holding a debate that late in the campaign. The commission, which has the unenviable task of finding common ground between the competing campaigns, did not weigh in on any of the new proposals. The organization has come under scrutiny already during this election after the first debate between Trump and Biden deteriorated, with the president frequently interrupting his opponent and the moderator unable to take control. For Trump, who is recovering from COVID-19 at the White House after spending 3 days in the hospital, the changes are an unwelcome disruption to his effort to shift focus away from a virus that has killed more than 210,000 Americans this year. In an interview with Fox business anchor Maria Bartiromo, shortly after the commission's announcement, Trump insisted he was in, quote, great shape, and called the idea of a virtual debate a, quote, joke. I'm not going to do a virtual debate, end quote, he declared. The president's campaign manager, Bill Stepien, said Trump would stage a rally rather than debate next Thursday, so it's not clear yet if he will be well enough to do that. This has been Lynn Curry reading the News Gazette for Thursday, October 8th, 2020.